goal chance for Conor McGrath. Bernie, surely give it in, Conor.
Oh, woo! What a goal.
Mackey heading it towards the 21-metre line. Keane Mackey chance. Still going.
Go on, your boy,
goal is up for Cats.
Oh,
what a goal.
I can't think of a better position or a better place to be in right now anywhere in the world. It's time to take Sam to throne.
If you look back in sporting history, we'll see that the whingers and the whiners are forgotten, the characters remembered briefly, but we'll stick in your mind that the champions who showed class.
I want nothing to do with that, to be quite honest. You know, I think it's a disgrace.
A little small change before the game, worth the treat. A bit of luck,
Donovan.
Has had a
back.
Wild effort on goal. It's on the first one! Equaliser!
Incredible!
Yes, you're very welcome to the Off the Ball GAA podcast. It's with thanks to Borgosh Energy, proud sponsor of the GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship. Keep up to date and follow hashtag Hurling to the Core. Dave McIntyre and Shane Stapleton reunited. My thanks to Oisin Langan, who sat in my stead over the last couple of weeks. I haven't listened to it. But
you have a few powerful performances.
I would say that I'm going to have to pull up my socks. Well, or will I? Surely our listeners are pretty pissed off at this stage with hearing two hurling snobs just waxing. Did you cover any football over the last couple of weeks? Just ignore the large ball completely.
It didn't come up.
What hurling championship? What football championship, brother? It's all about the hurling.
Well, with the Super 8s, you're trying to stamp out the hurling anyway.
Well, anyway.
I'm sure you
I am back, which means we will be going heavy on Galway Mayo, Cavan Monaghan, Offaly Westmeath, Cork Tip, and of course Kerry Clare over the next hour or so. We will be very much paying more, far more than lip service to what's going to be happening in Wexford Park on Saturday evening in the Leinster semi-final with Kilkenny head down to Wexford. No doubt it'll be a sun-drenched Wexford Park, isn't it always, says you. But an awful lot more to get through as well, starting with the stories of the week. Shane, where do you want to start? I should say we'll be chatting to Billy Joe Patton as well on all the football. So if the first part of the podcast today doesn't tickle your fancy, well, just hang on. Billy Joe's coming. The Mayo man is coming.
He's always good value. Some of the stories of the week, I suppose it's unavoidable. The saga, I presume it's going to head to a saga with Dear McConnelly and a proposed 12-week ban for his altercation with Kieran Branigan.
I was accused on Twitter of not going heavy enough or quickly enough into being heavy enough on Dear McConnelly in commentary on Saturday evening
that
on Sky Sports.
Someone approach.
Has said, oh, it took McIntyre five replays to acknowledge that he had pushed the linesman. I thought we called it as we saw it. We certainly showed the replay often enough, and we gave the two in particular angles that showed the contact between Dear McConnelly and the linesman. Like, I don't see, I'm not sure this is going to become a saga. There may well be an occasion for the first time in as many years that a senior high-profile inter-county footballer and his county board and the cohorts in behind him or her decided that they needed to accept the ban and move on. I think there's a very good chance this will be one of those.
Yeah, he has until the weekend to appeal. You mean he'll do a John Milan? Back when
exactly,
he
just say, look, lads, yeah, I did
Ryan
push
Murphy.
Him. The ban is harsh, but that's a different debate. The rule is a bit of a joke. I know it's there to protect officials up and down the country, and I absolutely back that. But 12 weeks for this specific incident does seem incredibly harsh. A guy isn't going to get 12 weeks for hitting somebody off the ball.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's a case of the letter of the law versus the lie of the land here, I think. You know, we all know that it's not worth missing 3 months of football and possibly club hurling as well, and club football, of course, with Vincent's. But, you know, you have to set a precedent somewhere and say you absolutely cannot do this. Much like, and it's the same with Evan Comerford, the Tipperary goalkeeper as well, and he had a bit of a minor altercation, it was called, with Paddy Russell, the same goalkeeper.
Huge suspension's been meted out. Evan, Dermot Connolly's getting 12 weeks. We see the issue with Davy Fitzgerald. Again, what Davey did was wrong, and he deserved to be banned, but the 8 weeks was a lot.
Yeah.
And the 12 weeks that Kieran McGeaney's dealing with at the moment, it wasn't deemed to be significant enough to make the referee's match report or for him to show a card of any colour at the time. The story is more about Dermot Connolly.
It is.
What is he doing finding himself in a situation whereby he's incurring such a suspension in a nothing game against a team they were beating by 7 or 8 points at the time? And it's a line ball that hasn't gone your way. How are you in this situation?
It's probably a situation where he's been wound up by players throughout the game.
Of course it is.
You know, but do you think back last year, wasn't there 4 games in a row between club and county where his shirt was ripped off him or was torn?
But so, he knows he's getting to deal with that. He has to learn how to cope with it.
Yeah.
He's not 18. He's 29.
He was lucky enough to be blessed with these footballing skills. Unfortunately, the downside is you're going to have to learn to completely control your temper no matter what's happening.
But when's the
you?
Last time you saw Bernard Brogan, Conor McManus, Dean Rock being targeted in such a way? Like, particularly Brogan and McManus, at their absolute peak.
They know they're not going to react.
That is the key.
It is the point. Yeah.
That is the key. Yeah. You would think, let's get to McManus. You stop him, you beat Monaghan. Mm. But there's just no point because he will just laugh at you. And he'll move on
from it. Well, no, he has had a few wrestling matches with Neil McGee in the past couple of years as well, but probably never to the same extent. Look, Dear McConnelly's going to look at the incident. I'm sure he has. And he's going to go, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. You know, there's nothing to be gained. Everybody knows you can't touch an official. Nobody does it. I mean, obviously, these things happen now and again. I wonder, from a wider point of view, are the GAA going to come down harder when it comes to discipline? I see Willie Dunphy's after getting off for... He got a red card against Wexford, the Laois wing forward. It seemed at the time, you know, I didn't have the benefit of a replay when I was there, that a high ball was coming in. He pulled down across one of the Wexford defenders' heads. He's after getting off, I presume, based on the idea that he was going for the ball. Alan O'Connor has failed in his appeal to get off for a high tackle against Waterford, so he's out of the Tipperary football game. And obviously Evan Comerford is out for 12 weeks as well. So maybe they are just going to come down harder. And well, I suppose you have to have zero tolerance policy.
You know now, if you raise a hand to an official, you're going to find yourself in hot water lasting 12 weeks. I think Dublin will just accept the suspension. It's not going to be overly material when it comes to their overall season. I think they will reach an All-Ireland semi-final, and fully fit and raring to go, Dear McConnelly will be a factor in that All-Ireland semi-final.
Well, what have you seen from them in the past to suggest they won't appeal this?
Well, it's the evidence of what we've seen in the past which suggests to me they won't appeal this. Mm. Because the furore over every appeal that they've lodged successfully and got their player back onto the field, usually arising out of a loophole or a technicality, it leaves a very bad taste in the mouth. It pays absolutely no respect to the disciplinary procedures that have been evoked by the GAA. And it's a refusal to accept responsibility for what you've done.
That's true.
And I think that Dublin are going to look at the overall PR situation and feel the amount of flack we will get if we, A, appeal it, B, successfully appeal it, and Dermot Connolly's playing in a Leinster semi-final, versus just letting the issue go away now. Dermot's gone, we move on, they're going to beat the winners of Offaly and Westmeath. They're almost certainly going to beat Kildare or Meath. And depending on what the draw throws up in the quarterfinals, you'd be amazed if he wasn't in an All-Ireland semi-final in a few weeks' time. Tough on him, he shouldn't have done it. Accept the responsibility for what you've done and move on. I think the Dublin County Board will want to move on.
Hopefully they do. It's funny you mention leave a bad taste in your mouth. I was in Kerry, I was watching the match in Killarney on Sky, and I sat down beside this old man. He was, you know, he was playing with the form book in his newspaper, and he was writing in whatever. He wasn't really paying much attention to the match, but he was looking up at it now and again and chatting to me a bit. And there was a fair old pong off his breath. And I kind of wasn't paying full attention because I was looking at the match. But in the corner of my eye, I looked around. He had a sip out of his Guinness. Then he put his hand over to the railing at the side where he had a packet of sliced ham, put his hand in, took up a slice of ham, down the hatch, and washed it down with a bit of Guinness. So, yeah, you're after making me think of that with the bad taste in the mouth. Anyway, the next story then is
proposed hurling restructure.
Yeah.
I mean, senior hurling championships consisting of two provincial championships and a third provincial qualifier group. Essentially, Leinster and Munster will have five teams that play off against each other in four matches apiece. The top two will go into the provincial final. The third place team will go into the All-Ireland quarterfinal.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't see the sense in it because, okay, there is a certain element of sense in it, of course, but does this make the province any more exciting? No, because to get the best out of hurling championship, you need to see the likes of Tip, Clare against Kilkenny, Galway as often as possible. The province is already tired, they're already dead, so dragging them out longer, having the games meaning less, is not going to make them any better.
Will the games mean less? And how will this make them even more tired, of the word you use?
There'll be dead rubbers, of course, which you don't want in, like, it's currently a knockout competition.
Don't want this. You just want the whole entire provincial championship structure to be scrapped. So that's not going to happen.
No, I don't want the province scrapped. I want them played off in the space of a month. Then I want
overall championship, you want them scrapped.
No, their
relevance to the championship.
No. I want the league scrapped. And then I want the provinces played off in the space of a month and no longer. And then you've got a club window. And then you come back and have two groups of seven. They're played off 6 weeks in a row. Everyone gets six fixtures. And you go into quarterfinals.
There'll be dead rubbers in that as well, of course.
Well, of course. But at least this, the provinces knockout. There is a league-based format in the middle. And then you've got a knockout All-Ireland series.
So you're not happy with this?
No, sure. I just don't.
Okay. Can I give you the non-hurling man viewpoint?
If you must.
Because, you know, we have to speak up for the common man here. There are more of me than there are of you.
Yeah.
Which is a fair point, I think. I think this is a great thing. I don't get to watch enough provincial championship hurling. I think the strength and depth in the hurling championship is becoming better at the moment, and that you're more likely to have better games. I think Dublin will come back a bit stronger. Cork are definitely coming back. There's more in Limerick. Waterford, Kilkenny, Galway and Tipperary, the four big teams right now. Clare are showing that they're coming back a bit more. And I think, as we will be speaking about Wexford, that they could be potential provincial champions over the next two or three seasons. When you throw all of them into the mix, we're going to get better games. Now, there's no crossover, which is what you want. You want to see a situation whereby, outside of the qualifier system, you could have Tipperary playing Kilkenny before an All-Ireland semi-final or an All-Ireland quarter-final. I agree with that. But in terms of taking this initial step, I like it.
But it's the wrong step because you could.
What's
just
the next story?
Okay. Yeah, there's no point in repeating myself. The Connacht are pulling out of the Interpros for 2018. They're not going to put a team into either code, which, you know, it's just another kind of death knell for this competition. And it's such a shame because there were times when there were 50,000 people showing up to when it was the Railway Cup.
In the 1960s.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I mean, even in the 70s and 80s as well, there were huge crowds at it. It's a shame because you could potentially, now again, it all comes back to the structure of the championship. If you had, at the very end of the season, you built in an Interpro thing at the end, a week or two later, 2 weeks later, and you actually
Why
did
though?
Have all
For
the
For what reason?
Because it's a fantastic
At the end where you're taking another week away from the clubs.
Yeah, there is that. Or else play it as the day before the All-Ireland hurling final, everyone bar the All-Ireland finalists.
And which players would really want to be playing in that? Look, the reason the Railway Cup was so big at the time is because there was no coverage of TV. There was no TV coverage of the biggest All-Ireland games, bar the All-Ireland final. So the best players in the country, nobody elsewhere in the country got to see these players unless they went to see them play in the Railway Cup, where you get the best players from all four provinces suddenly thrown in together and you can watch them all over the course of two or three big games. That's why they went. The last 20 years, we get to see every one of the best players in the country every game, every summer, throughout the league as well. Everything's televised. We even see them playing at under 21 level. We get to watch them playing in the Fitzgibbon and Sigerson Cups as well. So there is almost a saturation point in terms of the coverage of Gaelic football and hurling in this country. So we don't need the Railway Cup for us to see these players on show.
Maybe not.
Which is the reason why nobody goes anymore.
It's more important than the international rules, which is rammed down our throats, is put on television, and it generates a crowd that way. And obviously when Australia don't put in a proper team.
But you might get 25 to 30,000 people in an international rules game. You're not going to get more than a couple of thousand at the Railway Cup.
It's much like rugby. It's force-fed to us so much that people start going to it. You know, I mean, there is.
Do you really see? Do you see a future in any way for the Railway Cup?
No, but I.
So tradition was the only reason it was continuing.
I don't think it'll. I think it is going down the Swanee, but I think there is such potential in it because you could have unbelievable dream teams playing against each other. I just think it's a shame. I think it's dead. But
it's definitely dead now that we're in a situation where we've got a province actually pulling out. A couple of other quick things. Michael Murphy's confirmed his fitness ahead of the Tyrone game for Donegal, which is obviously a massive point of view, a big story in Donegal, because you would see them as having a great chance of winning any game if he's in the team. And Eamon Fitzmaurice says supplements has become a dirty word.
Yeah, well, we see you coming in with supplements most days, so what do you
add? I add a little bit of protein to my shake or to my muffin or to my porridge.
Yeah, like
that's about it.
It's interesting what he said, and I'll just read out a little bit of what he says. So Kerry has a food first motto, i.e. the players get their nutrition from food as much as they possibly can. However, because of the nature of how hard and when they train, sometimes they're advised on supplements they can take if they wish to aid their nutrition. For example, after a gym session where they've expended a lot of energy, the players will have a protein shake or a bar to get as much protein in their system as quick as possible. You know, and it's true though, like if you've done a hard training session, especially with a team when you're playing a field sport, you are advised to get some protein into you straight away and then maybe 40 minutes later get a full dinner into you as well. Like the body does need it. And if you are working a job and I don't know, I'm sure you have a very busy lifestyle. Trying to actually plan it out and always pre-prepare meals, it's very difficult. So it is kind of a shame that because of what's happened with the Brendan O'Sullivan saga now, that everything is up for question now.
It's become a dirty word in rugby as well.
Yeah, well, I'd say more justifiably so. If you look at the physiques of some of the...
You wanted to talk about the black card question. Look, we had another situation where Kevin McKiernan up in Newry just dragged a fella down heading in the last couple of minutes as he was heading towards goal. There's no change there. The black card was never going to deal with the cynical fouling in the last 10 minutes of a championship match.
I'll run a suggestion by you. What if, and this is all going to be subject to no interpretation of referees again, because if they get the decision wrong, no matter what it is, if they get the decision wrong, the rule seems daft. But instead of the black card, which doesn't, like, it actually has helped the game in that, like, the body checking and all that has really dried up. But last 5 minutes of the game with the result on the line, you're happily going to take a black card if it helps your team, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so am I. No problem at all. The only way you can stop it is to hurt a team on the scoreboard. And some people would suggest giving a free at the 21. Perhaps that's okay. But if you need a goal in the last few minutes, I would say for a cynical foul that the referee clearly interprets as a cynical foul, penalty. Because they will stop overnight. Now, you'll still have, once in a blue moon, a bad call. But if a penalty, and you see this in American sports, that let's say you do a late hit, it might be half the distance to the goal in American football. So you were 50 yards away, now you're 25 yards away. It's just unbelievably penal, punitive.
I think the penalty is very penal. I would be listening, I'd be willing to listen to the idea of a free.
People foul cynically to stop scores. Here is the ultimate deterrent.
Well, I would, for me, I think if you go down to 14 men, if there's a black card, now, again, may not affect the last 10 minutes, players will be happy enough, there'll be enough bodies back anyway. But if you are finding yourself playing almost an entire game with 14 men, well, maybe that would be something we can go down. But look, the black card debate will always be there. Resurgence of the Leinster teams. Give me this in 30 seconds.
Yeah, well,
I need some convincing of this until they play in Division 1 for more than one season and get into the fourth round of the qualifiers or an All-Ireland quarterfinal.
It's saying it more in hope than expectation, really. But, you know, Kildare look like they're going to push on this year. Now, they were disappointing in Division 2 league final. But, you know, Meath scored 27 points, albeit it was against Louth. But Louth have looked, you know, they got promotion from Division 3, so they look like they're half decent.
Making progress. That's fair enough. Wexford got promotion as well.
Kildare have gone up to Division 1 for next
year. Yeah, Meath could have gone up to Division 1, just one or two results. Let's hold fire on whether or not the Leinster teams are resurgent.
Well, like, Kildare have Paddy Brophy back as well. And that's like, a lot of their players have been down to the AFL the last few years. It's about now and the next year or two that these guys should be hitting their peak. So Kildare, with Keane O'Neill in charge, they actually could make a bit of a push. Probably still too far from Dublin to really challenge them.
All right, that's the stories of the week. We're previewing this weekend's football championship fixtures after this with Billy Joe Patton. All right, time to get into this weekend's games. There are a number of them and a lot of interest around a great many of them, but I think it's fair to say that the game in Pearse Stadium, it's a 4 o'clock throw-in at Galway. It's Galway against Mayo in the Connacht semi-final. Billy Joe Patton has joined us on the podcast to preview this weekend's games. Billy Joe, how's it going?
Very good, very good. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Literally, as we stepped into studio, the Mayo team arrived at our desks, at our news desks, Billy Joe. Just the one change. It's Jason Doherty's into the starting 15. He replaced Kevin McLaughlin early on against Sligo. He goes into the 15 at the expense of the injured Conor O'Shea, all of which means there's still no Aidan O'Shea. So,
what's happening? You would have thought, really, that, I don't know, you would have thought that was the ideal opportunity, you know, for Aidan to go in there and replace his brother. And maybe I had been hoping that he'd go and ask him to play a similar role where he'd, you know, play a lot of football around the middle of the field, be an option on the Mayo kick-out, try and put pressure on the goal kicker and use the two great strengths that he has. And I think that as a ball winner and as a fella that's big and strong and that can carry the ball and break a couple of tackles. And I think that Mayo, and to Aidan O'Shea's detriment and to Mayo's detriment, have got away from that in terms of how they're utilising Aidan O'Shea. And I think they've probably used him for too long in the full forward line as a target man, when I would like to see him go back to the basics, back to the things that made him a big name in Gaelic football. And there, as I have just outlined, and I think it was an ideal opportunity to bring him in. But the only thing I can look at as to why he's not is that he had a groin injury coming up to the Sligo game. Maybe they just don't feel he has a full 70 minutes in him. And if you're going to start Andy, which they look to be, you need an impact coming off the bench and probably no better man to get the crowd going. And with his versatility in that, if you need something in the middle field or you need something at the edge of the square, you can bring him in. I'm sure he'll be frustrated with it, but I can understand why they've done.
Billy Joe, do you think there's any possibility of this becoming a full-time thing? You know, the way we've seen Dublin when they can bring on the likes of Jack McCaffrey during the league, Kevin McManaman for so many years, and then Aidan O'Shea, the way he came on against Donegal and turned the game. Do you think it could be something that we see just throughout the summer? Because maybe he thinks, I'm not getting as much as I want out of him for the 70 minutes, so maybe 20 minutes he'll just come through and be like a battering ram.
You know, I think it's quite possible, and I kind of agree with you. I think Mayo do need something to that effect. Now, if you got Aidan O'Shea up and running in terms of the condition he has been in maybe the last couple of seasons, you know, he's got 70 minutes under his belt. He can give you 70 minutes. I suppose the thing is for me is that I probably would have preferred to see Andy use that impact sub coming off the bench, because more often than not, it's in that area of the field where you need a little something in and around the square. And I think Andy, with 20 minutes to go, is more likely to create you something in there maybe than Aidan O'Shea.
They need a few, though, Billy Joe, don't they? They need more than the one. There was so much debate over the last few years, particularly actually towards the very end of Pat Gilroy's Dublin reign, as to whether or not he was intentionally finishing with his better team as opposed to starting with his best team, the guys he was bringing off the bench. And I guess that's just been continued on by Jim Gavin. I accept Dublin have more resources and maybe better depth when it comes to the overall strength of their squad. But I wonder, should the likes of an Aidan O'Shea is the case here, maybe a Tom Parsons, even go as far as a Kevin McLaughlin, maybe that you, when you look at your bench, the opposition see three, if not four guys that they really know they have to worry about in the final 20, 25 minutes of a game?
Yeah, I think it's dependent on resources. And to me, you know, I have no problem with that. I think you're better off going that way. And I have no problem seeing Aidan and Andy Moran coming off the bench. Look, Donald Vaughan's going to come off the bench next year. He's a good record in score. He's going to be a physical impact. Where Mayo have strength and depth is in their half-back line. And if it, you know, in their inside forward line, they just don't have that strength and depth to leave two guys off ready with them to come on. So, you know, Parsons, he's been playing too well. He's been too consistent. I think you'd have to leave him where he is. Now, the hope was that you'd have maybe a Barry Moran or an Alan Dillon to factor at the stage, but that doesn't look to be happening. So, you know, really what Mayo are left with is, you know, Don Vaughan and Stephen Cohen, who's not going to make an impact. He's a good, solid player. And obviously, Aidan O'Shea at the stage. I would like to see Andy added to that mix, and then you just try and fill in and get 50 minutes out of some of the younger lads early on. Even if it means to me, and I'm happy enough, even if as a Mayo supporter, even if it meant starting like with an extra half back and play him as a half, you know, notionally line him out in that forward line and just tell him go and play a sort of a half back game, so that you're solid defensively, that you're allowing the likes of Lee Keegan and Patrick Durkin to break free and attack, because they're really good at it, because you've got the security of an extra defender on the park. And then with the knowledge then that when you need something the last 20 minutes, you have Andy and maybe Aidan O'Shea to come on, fellas who are, you know, more used to or more comfortable playing in that last 30 yards of the field.
Billy Joe, we often hear talk of our Mayo bringing through kind of the next generation excellent players, and you look at the team and the likes of Chris Barrett is in there, Jerick Hafferty is back in this year, Fergal Boland is in there, but Jason Doherty is an interesting one to me, to see him back in the team instead of Conor O'Shea. Like 2014, I remember down in Limerick, that replay against Kerry, kicked over some wonderful points. I'm just wondering, like, is this a guy who needs to be stepping up big time at this stage, especially because they do need an extra scorer in the full forward line, or in the forward line?
Yeah, it would. And even that season and the season before last, he were really good for Jason. And as last year was a bit of a step back, you know, new manager probably asked to do a slightly different role. So he has to recapture that form. Whereas what he did really well for Mayo was winning breaks, working hard, and then getting forward. And he's a great goal scorer if he gets that opportunity to get a goal and get inside. Look, I think it's a big thing. It's a big problem with Mayo is that we've heard about Conor Loftus, we've heard about Evan Regan, and really we haven't brought them along. Look, last week, our last time out was a perfect opportunity to give them fellas, you know, some real game time in the Connacht Championship, if you were serious about developing them and if you were serious about, you know, utilising them in this year's Championship. But to me, it looks like, you know, Rochford, he is going to go with the tried and tested. He sees that's the best way of Mayo getting the job done. And, you know, I'm not so sure. I would have liked to see a bit more strength and depth. Now that we think about it, though, the only thing is, in the full back line, you're a bit more comfortable that, you know, Harrison is back from injury and he'll be an option to come in there, whether you need to make a change there or even if it's a dummy team. You know, I'd have no problem seeing Keith Higgins move up to the half forward line and Harrison go in there, corner back.
Yeah, it's interesting on that topic of strength and depth that Stephen Rochford does believe that the current squad he has is the best that he's had. And I know it's only his second season, but he feels it's the strongest Mayo squad in terms of resources that they've had for a number of years. And he said the two final games of the league, the six players that would have come off the bench in those two games all would have been involved in the All-Ireland final, and four of them started. But are they all players that the opposition are really going to fear going into the last 20 minutes? On Galway, Billy Joe, I guess so much of the narrative always seems to focus on Mayo. We nearly forget that it is a Galway-Mayo game at Pearce Stadium where there's going to be 20-odd thousand. I was speaking to the one of the administrators in Galway GA today, and he said they have to get a message out there in terms of the difficulties that's going to be involved with match traffic, congestion, getting people into the stadium early. This is going to be, there's going to be an old-school feel to what is going to be happening at Pearce Stadium at the weekend. And we thought they'd narrowed the gap last year because they'd beaten Mayo in a huge game in Castlebar. Ultimately, when you totted everything up at the end of September, well, clearly the gap hadn't really narrowed because Mayo could have, some would say should have won the All-Ireland, and Galway are beaten out the gate in an All-Ireland quarter-final. So has the gap narrowed? The same question 12 months on.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely think it has. I think I really see that Tipperary game as a bit of an outlier for Galway.
Okay.
I think it was a total non-performance. I think the Galway have their own issues in Copac. Their record is really, really poor over the last, you know, 10, 15 years. I just think that then when you add what they did last year in the Connacht Championship and then you add back to the solid league campaign they put in, a decent performance to beat Kildare in the Division 2 league final, and I just think they have closed the gap, but it's twofold because I think they're getting better and I think Mayo may have regressed. And I just feel that even the bookies' price on this, I think Galway are, you know, they're closer to Mayo than what a lot of people think they are. I just hope that the Mayo camp recognises, and I'm sure they do, because it's the local derby, and Mayo have never taken Galway for granted ever, I don't think so. And I just think that Galway are in a really good position because Mayo are under pressure. Galway are playing at home. There's not really a whole lot of pressure on them, and they have improved, and they have developed a whole load of number of options. They've developed, a style of play that they're comfortable with. They're going to get loads of bodies behind the ball. They're going to try and counter-attack quickly, and they're going to ask Mayo a lot of questions about, because Mayo's, you know, counter-attack defence hasn't been really, really good. We saw Cavan destroy them in that area of the field in the league, and Galway would be looking to, you know, capitalise on that again.
If it's a tight game, I suppose the experience of Mayo should be a big factor here, but like I would say there's probably more attack and threat, even if it's some younger players there in the Galway forward line. You look at Damien Comer, Shane Walsh, Michael Daly looks like he's excellent, Danny Cummins has that great pace, and Sean Armstrong coming back in again this year. In the Division 2 final against Kildare, he was just staying inside and just over and back constantly, always presenting an option, winning his own ball. He looks like he's at it a lot again this year. So would you agree, Billy, that there's possibly more in that Galway attack line, assuming that enough ball goes in there?
No, I would. I think you're right. And I think even adding in the fact like somebody like Conroy in the middle of the field, who's, you know, very attack-minded and can, you know, a really good outside shooter, and that's very important in the modern game with blanket defences and all that. So I think, yeah, there's definitely an argument to be made that the Galway have the better six forwards. I suppose the key thing for them, is as you said, is whether they've got enough ball in there. And we have seen Mayo, you know, not so far away, like last season, put in some excellent defensive performances when they've utilised the sweeper. So they'll be, I imagine that's what I would like to see them do, and that's what I hope they'll do, and they'll try and shut down Galway space that way. And I suppose from Mayo's point of view, they'll be trying to say, okay, we've got to limit the possession going in there, and even if it does get in there, Mayo probably have the edge physically in the defence. Mayo, you know, very physically strong, whereas a lot of those Galway forwards, apart from maybe, you know, Comer's strong and direct, some other Galway forwards, while they're very quick and sharp on their feet and good finishers, they're probably not the strongest. So it's probably, if Mayo can get enough bodies in there, they'll probably try and physically overpower that Galway forward line, and hope that they don't give away too many frees.
Lisa, there are four other games I want to move on to, but before we leave this one, I want to throw two, I guess, speculative questions at you. Is this, in your mind, the de facto Connacht final? Whoever wins this game is going to come out of the province?
Yeah, probably. Look, you know, Roscommon will... I think whoever's going to win this is going to be red hot favourites going into that final, and they will have the advantage. I think these two teams are on a level ahead of Roscommon at the minute. I think that would be fair. Now, Roscommon will give either team a game if they're below par. And we saw in Salisbury last year that Roscommon nearly nipped Galway, even though in the replay Galway were much too strong for them. So I think it'll be something similar. Whoever gets over this will get a whole load of confidence from it. Like Galway. If Galway win this, they would see themselves as contenders, because that's the way they think and that's the way they should think.
For the All-Ireland.
And they'll think, well, look, why can't we get to a last four?
Yeah.
You know, that's what they'll think if they win. And like, all right, it might be too much of a step for them to say they'll go on and win it, but they'll see the last four as their target and see where they go after that. And you think if Mayo put in a good performance and win, their summer will start looking a whole lot better when you consider the last couple of league games where they physically overpowered Donegal and Tyrone, and then go away to Galway, and if they're going to win, they're going to physically overpower Galway, that's how they're going to do it. They'll feel good about themselves going into the, into July and August.
So on that, and bearing in mind what awaits them potentially in a Connacht final, where it would leave them then in the summer, who is under the most pressure coming into this game? Is it Kevin Walsh or Stephen Rochford?
Oh, it's definitely Stephen Rochford. I don't think Kevin Walsh is under any pressure. Whatever happens in this championship for Galway, I think they made progress by just getting to Division One, and like their development over the next 18 months will be dependent on, okay, what happens in this championship, but also what happens in Division One next year, whether they can retain their status. So that's how you build, in my opinion, in terms of, you know, to essentially leave yourself as a contender. You have to play a lot of football in Division One, and you know, let's make no bones about it. If Mayo lose, you know, Rochford's under severe pressure. You're talking about a dramatic turnaround like last season where they go all the way to the All-Ireland final. But I just feel a loss from Mayo would probably knock the players back so much mentally that I just wouldn't see them being able to recover like they did last season.
Yeah, that and combined with the qualifiers looks like a treacherous route this year. And if Mayo did get caught into qualifiers as well as this game, you're looking at a lot of players that, you know, aren't getting any younger. David Clark, Keith Higgins, Andy Moore, and just to name a couple. So it could actually kind of signal the end of this Mayo team. Now, that might sound a bit dramatic, but it's hard to know what a couple of quick-fire defeats would do for this team.
Yeah, well, they're kind of in the similar boat to Dublin, aren't they, when you look at the age profile of their best players.
But Dublin have more obvious talent coming through, I would suggest.
Well, that's a different debate. Yeah. And one myself and Billy Joe have had a couple of times.
Yeah, and I just think that the thing for Mayo is that they don't have the luxury of being able to say, okay, you know, if you go through the qualifiers again, you know, can you leave Cullen Boyle on the bench, you know, to make an impact coming in the halfback? Probably not. You have to start him. And the way he's going at the minute, it's probably 50, 60 minutes for him. And as you mentioned, there's a couple of other players like that in Mayo, and I think you're right. I think six or seven more games, I think it'd be too much for this Mayo team.
Okay, we'll wrap it up with the Cavan Monaghan game. For me, that's maybe the second biggest game of the weekend, but it's sandwiched in between the two Munster football semi-finals. One maybe more clear-cut than the other. I'm not sure how you look upon Cork Tip and Kerry Clare. Start with Cork Tip, Billy Joe. Liam Kearns has done his absolute best to talk down his side's chances this week. He has been talking about all the players that were missing, up to 10, he was saying. They may as well just not turn up.
Yeah, I think Liam has shown all his experience here to, I suppose, construct the narrative that he wants to get out there. And look, I think that it's very, which is unusual, that the Munster Championship, these games are quite interesting because we've seen progression from Tipperary and Clare, and we've seen nothing but regression from Cork. And have we seen any green shoots in terms of that they're turning the corner and improving any bit? I'm not so sure I have. But let's go this way. This is the weekend where they have to do it because, make no doubt about it, Tipperary will see this as a massive opportunity for them to claim a big scalp, get into a Munster final. And if there's any doubt in Cork minds, you know, the way Tipperary have played with this kind of no-fear attitude, they have good scoring forwards. If they get enough ball in there, you feel they're going to score. You feel they're going to get goals as well. And it could be a horrible day out for Cork if they don't start in the right frame of mind. In saying that, I think that just has to be a reaction in Cork. There has to be too many good footballers in this county that they don't actually show some level of confidence at some stage. So I kind of expect that to be on Saturday.
This might sound like typical poor mountain from a Tipperary person, but I actually think Tipperary they could easily be taken down this weekend. Because one thing that we saw last year, especially in that semi-final against Mayo, is that Liam Kearns doesn't have a huge panel to work with. And when Robbie Kiley went off, he didn't have the same level of class to come in.
Yeah.
And the likes of Philip Austin is out. Paddy Codd, a former captain who came back this year, he's out. Peter Atchison obviously isn't around. An excellent goalkeeper in Evan Comerford is suspended as well. So I would imagine that Cork didn't really tailor their training. You know, this talk of periodization for your training. For Waterford, they expected to beat them no matter. And as it happened, they only scraped past them. But I think it's all set up for a Cork ambush, which is a weird thing to say about Cork playing Tipperary in Munster.
Well, I think, and that's probably why Liam Kearns felt he really needed to try and readdress the narrative. And I agree with you. Look, I expect Cork to win.
Is that just out of habit, though, Billy Joe? Out of tradition that you expect Cork to win. Evidence points towards them having a really awkward weekend. This is a side that could have been beaten by Waterford. Now, all due respect to Waterford and the efforts they're making down there, but it's Waterford. Like, they're one of the worst four teams in the country. They've won one championship match in the last 20 years. Cork were nearly beaten by this rabble.
Yeah,
like, it's unbelievable.
I agree. And the team with all the form, the team with all, I suppose, what you're saying, are doing the right thing, or just Tipperary. But I don't know. Maybe I'm basing it totally on tradition. But I just feel that there has to be something in Cork. There has to be some sort of reaction. And I think
we've been saying that for 3 years now, though.
I know, David, you're great at pointing out these holes in my predictions at all times, and I thank you for that. But I still think there has to be something. There has to be something that's Cork in. There's too many good footballers in Cork for there not to be something.
I think it could be a really good game. And you know what? Even in the 10 seconds I've had since calling Waterford a rabble, I think I'm bang out of order, because they played so well in that game.
Yeah.
And they are busting themselves as much as any other inter-county side to try and get themselves up to the next level. So, to all those people involved in Waterford football, I apologise before you send me the tweets and the emails rightly accusing me of being an absolute, well, so-and-so. The other semi-final, Billy Joe, it's Clare Kerry. It is in Cusick Park, which is a really good thing from the point of view of this game being competitive and close. I just wonder how competitive might it be?
Yeah, look, the one thing I'm expecting a big performance from Kerry based on this. They'll be going into it with huge confidence from what they did in the league. I think they'll be like to change the focus or the debate in Kerry away from drug testing and O'Sullivan to football. I think there'll be so many young players there that'll be itching to get a chance. And they definitely won't take Clare for granted, because I think, like Tipperary, Clare's performances over the last 18 months have ensured that any of the bigger teams that play them now will not take them for granted. So I expect Kerry to put on a bit of a show here and announce themselves as, you know, really, real, real contenders, and actually to probably put the game to bed early enough. And I saw some bookmakers' websites that the handicap was like 8 or 9, and I think that Kerry could cover that.
Yeah, I spoke with Clare defender Dean Ryan recently, and he was talking about how attitudes have very much changed in Clare football. Now, at the same time, he says there's plenty of people in Clare that if there was football outside the front door, they'd close the curtains. But he was saying that since Colm Collins came in and they went down and had a weekend in Bear Island, where you arrive in, everyone puts their phones into a bag, they don't see them for the weekend, they spend the next 3 days, like, they arrived there and they had to run straight away. They spent the weekend in the muck and the shit, running kilometre after kilometre. And he said they had meetings that lasted all night, and it just completely changed the culture with the team. And, you know, that they're a different team since, which we've seen in their results. And getting to an All-Ireland quarter-final last year, that's the new standard to them as far as they're concerned. Now, whether they can build on it is the next thing. But, they've got Keelan Sexton inside, looks a great player. David Tuberty, obviously. Sean Collins is playing well at centre-forward. Gary Brennan. So they do have a lot of quality there. Now, whether it's enough to beat Kerry is a completely different thing. But you'd imagine it wouldn't be the whitewash that it was in Croke Park last year. That'll be a bit more similar to games they've had at Cusick Park before.
Well, maybe, yeah, I can see that argument as well. I just feel that the way Kerry are going to approach this championship, I think that they'll want to make a statement. And I think they'll start the game really fast. They'll just try and blow Clare away. And as you said, all the things that Clare have improved on in the past, that game probably would have been over 15 minutes. And I don't expect that to be the case. You know, Clare are going to hang in there, and it's going to be, you know, a good 50 minutes game, and they'll be well and truly in it. And I think their mentality is totally different, as you pointed out, Clare, that they don't probably fear some of these bigger guns, and they're more motivated to, you know, get the absolute best out of themselves. But I still think that Kerry are really going to want to make a statement here, and I think they'll get a good win.
I think one of the great situations that Clare find themselves in, if you look at the starting 15 that played against Limerick, it's pretty much last year's starting 15. Every year, counties like Clare have to reintroduce or bring guys in, 3 or 4 debutants in the opening championship match they have every year, because they just can't retain the squad, they can't retain the players.
Yeah.
Everyone who's available to play for Clare wants to play for them at the moment. They're all in there at the moment. Now, whether that means they have the capacity to really push Kerry this weekend, doubtful, I guess. But I think Clare are going to have a good run if they get the right draw in the qualifiers. The last of the Leinster quarterfinals, Westmeath against Offaly. It's probably not the standout fixture of the weekend, Billy Joe. But you've got two teams that had won a great league in Westmeath, and that, as expected, they steamroll their way through Division 4. They will be a Division 3 team alongside Offaly next year. Of all the games this weekend, this probably maybe the most difficult to call.
I think you're right. I think that really could go either way, and I doubt there'll be too many people adding that one to their accumulator unless they feel particularly strong in one way or another. It's one of these Leinster derbies where, you know, year on year, the kind of the power between these counties shifts one way or another, and it looks with these two at the minute, they seem to be operating at a level like Westmead. Their fall from grace was, you know, Jesus, it was crazy really how far they've gone. And,
although amidst that fall from grace, they have back-to-back Leinster final appearances for the first time in the history of the county. Bizarre situation.
And I think that's closer to their form. I think they've probably neglected the league, and, you know, it's not good for long-term development of a team, because I think we've seen, you know, with Heslin and, you know, Martin and fellas like this, that Paul Sharry, that they have good footballers that can operate at a high level, and they just need to find that consistency in the league so that they're operating out of a league that's at their level. And I think that in order to, you know, do well in the league as they have, I presume they'll have got together, even though I wasn't watching that division closely, they would have had a fairly settled side or squad, you know, throughout those games, and then it's just moving it on into the championship so that it's easier to, you know, I suppose, fine tune that game plan so that you're ready to attack the Leinster championship. So I think that might be to their benefit that they have so much of these wins and games playing a certain way under their belt, and that might just be the edge they need over Offaly.
Right, let's head north to Kingspan Breffni Park. Cavan Monaghan, they met a couple of years ago, Billy Joe, on a day that Cavan probably should have won. They had the beating of Monaghan, and was the experience in particular that Monaghan had coming in off the bench. Dick Clerk in particular came on for the last 10 minutes, and he just managed Monaghan through that final 10 minutes, and Cavan kind of kicked their way out of the game. Where do you see this one now, given that Monaghan have a game under their belts and that Cavan are coming into it fresh?
I think the advantage is with Monaghan, even though I know it's in Breffni Park. I've been very impressed with Monaghan this whole calendar year. After the disappointment of going out of the qualifiers long for last year, I think they've bounced back in a really, really strong fashion. You know, they're utilising the strengths they've always had. They've been decent at the back. You know, the Wileys and Colin Walsh, the fellas, great defenders. They've got loads of bodies back. I think they have a defined game plan now, and that they're trying to move the ball through that middle third quicker with the Hugheses and Carl Connell, and even, you know, Duffy coming off the bench like he did to great effect against Fermanagh. And then inside you have McManus and McCarron, which is like 50% more than what you had before, because really it was McManus, and now they have a two-pronged attack with the way McCarron showed his form throughout the league. And you saw glimpses against Fermanagh, even though you didn't see either player probably play to the standards that they can. And then from Cavan's point of view, you know, it's a bit of an unknown. And sometimes going into that first round of the championship, it's hard to gauge, you know, where you're at. Whereas Monaghan, you know, are kind of battle hardened after that Fermanagh game, and it'll be.
It was hardly a battle now, was it?
No, but I think it gives you an idea. It gives you an idea of where you're at and where you need to improve on. And I think it's hugely beneficial for players to get a win under their belt as opposed to coming in cold like that. And I it's not a case of if Cavan are going to come in, you know, I don't think it's a case of where Monaghan will underestimate Cavan. Like, it's a local derby. As you said, Cavan have nearly turned them over the last time. I think Cavan, Division 1 side, they drew in the league, the two teams, so they have that recent history. So it'll be close. So there's no way in the world that Monaghan are going to take Cavan for granted. I don't think they ever would. And it really will, from a Cavan point of view. I think the key thing for them will be keeping it tight to the back. Now, they have shown that they can do that with blanket defence. You know, they have been, I suppose, Joe Brawley probably called it, I don't know what he called it, but it was the Black Death or something. There's so many bodies back at certain stages. But they're going to have to keep that full back line tight to keep Monaghan out. And then they're just going to have to try and create something up front. And you know for a fact that Monaghan are going to focus heavily on McVitie if he's fit, and Garrod McCartney, and trying to shut those players down, because they are the two absolute key players for Cavan in terms of getting scores.
Shane, they may never have a better chance, really, with this group of players. The word potential has constantly been bandied around when it comes to Cavan, but they won the first of those under-21 provincial titles 6 years ago. So a lot of these guys are now heading towards their 30s. And while it is still a very young team, with Tyrone, Donegal on the other side of the draw, well, you'd have to wonder if Cavan are ever going to get a better chance in the next few years to actually win an Ulster Championship. They need to win one really big game now. I'm sure Down fans would have a lot to say about this, but one really big game and they could be in the last 12 of the Championship.
Yeah, and I mean, they had, obviously they didn't have a particularly good league, and it's a question I'd nearly put to Billy Joe. Does the league matter that much? Because Mayo finished 4th, 5th, 6th over the last number of years since Horan first came in anyway. We've seen Westmead up and down the whole time down in Division 4, and they get to Leinster Finals. Cavan finished 7th. They had a good win over Mayo. I was impressed when I saw them that day.
But, and drew at Kerry.
And
drew with Monaghan. It's not a bad league.
But obviously they're relegated, so I mean, it's not
It is Division
either.
1 though.
Yeah. So the other question is about Monaghan. I see Shawnee Johnson saying that Monaghan are one of the top four teams in the country. And I wonder, is that actually the case? So obviously Dublin, Kerry, Mayo are there at the moment. Then you have the likes of Donegal.
Well, they're in the argument for fourth place, aren't they?
They're in that argument, but would you see them winning in All-Ireland?
Well, I wouldn't see the other two winning one either.
Yeah, that's true, that's true. Could you see them breaking into that top three?
I don't know. Billy Joe, have Monaghan got the potential to play in an All-Ireland final this year?
I think they have. I they might tip for the Ulster Championship. I think they're the best balanced team in Ulster. And I think that they will... I think that they're my picks for the Ulster Championship. Now, the thing that Monaghan always needed to add to their game was another scoring threat. They seem to have done that. And they've needed to add some athleticism and legs in the middle third, and they seem to be trying to do that.
Darren Hughes is a massive loss, though, isn't he?
Yeah. No. He he's a great player, and he's kind of, you know, the modern day middle third player that he can kind of do a bit of everything.
Yeah.
And you know, I suppose if Monaghan are to go on and do anything in Croke Park, they, you know, in the future, or even win another championship, they're going to need big contributions from the likes of him and his brother, and even, you know, O'Connell and Duffy, fellas like that in that middle third of the field, Shane Carey, that they can live with the athleticism that you need to have, like a Mayo or a Kerry or Dublin will have in Croke Park.
Billy Joe, a pleasure as always. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem, lads. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
So that's the thoughts of four Mayo, as I described them up in Uri on Sunday. Born and played for Mayo, plays his club football in Armagh, played for Armagh, lives in Down and works in Meath. He's a complicated character, Billy Joe Patton. Anyway, his thoughts on the weekend's games. A lot of interesting football ahead. Anything else you want to focus on before we move to really the only reason you're here and the only reason you exist on this podcast is to talk hurling?
Sure, it's all about the small ball, isn't it?
Right, we'll talk the small ball next. We've talked this weekend's football fixtures. We're going to talk about really the only hurling fixture that's on the menu for this weekend, and it's probably a championship fixture that we had penciled in, Shane, to look forward to as soon as the draw was made, or particularly once Wexford had beaten Limerick, Galway and Kilkenny in the league. Everyone pointed towards this particular day in Wexford Park. Hopefully the sun is shining, weather forecast is good, and that there wouldn't have been an upset thrown in by Laois, which hasn't been the case. So here we are, Wexford Kilkenny. This could be epic.
Yeah, I absolutely cannot wait for the game. I'm going to be at it. I was even at Wexford Laois the last day in Port Laois, and that was brilliant for the first half hour, because Laois did put it up to them in the first half. They went 3 points to nil ahead. And Wexford, the thing that I noticed that I'd be interested to see if it continues is that from the get-go, they were going for goals. Now, they didn't get them immediately. They ended up with three, but they just look like they can score goals. Now, the big thing that might decide this game is, we know Wexford are going to go with a sweeper. Sean Murphy is excellent at it, the Owlert man, and you'd imagine he'll do so again. It's very hard to imagine that Davey will change to a conventional 15 for this. So the interesting thing then is, does that leave Kilkenny with a sweeper, or do they push up on him? Now, you could see the likes of Wally Walsh push up on him. Could be somebody else. Or Kilkenny could be left with a sweeper, which will protect that full back line, which we saw having so many problems last year. Possibly the biggest boost for Kilkenny is the return of Michael Fennelly, because he hasn't actually lost a championship game, or Kilkenny haven't lost a championship game that he's played in since 2013. I think that kind of says it all. He missed the All-Ireland final last year, and they obviously won the two All-Irelands before that. And Kilkenny they've had to use him sparingly in the last couple of seasons. Since the start of 2014, he's only played 14% of league minutes for Kilkenny,
wow,
which is mad. He hasn't played a regulation league game since 2013, and yet he's played 66% of championship minutes.
And his influence still looks like it's as important as it ever was. Is it a worry for Kilkenny that they still rely so heavily on one man?
It is, but isn't it brilliant that they have him? Like, when he won Hurler of the Year in 2011, he played only one full training match the whole year. And he just went and played, went, you know, he was doing up and down, doing lengths of Nolan Park while everyone else is training. But this guy is such an unbelievable athlete. And, you know, he's into, you know, he obviously works in that field doing S&C and recovery and nutrition and stuff like that. So he knows how to keep himself at peak fitness. But he won Hurler of the Year when only doing one training match the whole year. And he was All-Ireland, or he was man of the match in the All-Ireland final in 2015 as well against Galway. So he's just, he's a bit of a freak of nature. And the fact that he's back in the team means that you're unlikely to see a repeat of last year's All-Ireland final, where Tipperary were just able to run through that Kilkenny team. There was no shape.
Well, there was that feeling as soon as he went down in Thurles in the semi-final replay against Waterford.
In the good field.
Of course. That Tipperary would have been looking at it going, that is massive.
Yeah, he is their most important player. Obviously, TJ Reid has been Hurler of the Year. Richie Hogan's been Hurler of the Year. But he's the guy who...
As has Michael.
Yeah, as has Michael. He is the one. He is Kilkenny, as far as I can see. All the leaders they've lost in the last couple of years, he is now the main man. Like, Tommy Walsh has left, Henry Shefflin's left. Like, Michael Fennelly has completely taken over that mantle. And the thing is, can he yet again, from a standing start, come in and take over?
Well, he's had to be the type of player that can't afford a significant amount of time to reach his peak, because he's always coming back from something. Mm. He's always rehabbing something, or in, as is the case with his back over the years, he's always prehabbing something. So it's rare that he gets a run of games under his belt and that you can say, well, give Michael Fennelly three or four games and he's going to reach his peak. He has had to become an athlete that is able to produce his best performance in a one-off game, because he hasn't had the preparation that the rest of the players have had. So I guess they're hoping that's the case this weekend and in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and he would have said that himself, because he's got, it isn't a fully diagnosed back condition, but whatever it is with his back, sometimes it reacts really poorly and he'll be laid up for a week. Mm. And he said it himself, he might do a training session one day, reacts badly, he mightn't train again for 3 weeks. It causes all his groin problems, hip flexor problems, hamstring problems. So he just has to completely look after himself. Like 2012 and 2013, he played significantly in the league, and he missed, I think, most of 2013 up until the game where they got knocked out against against Cork. And then in 2012, he did his ankle as well, and he was out for the Leinster campaign as well. Mm. So you just have to mind him. At this stage, I'd say Cody doesn't even want to use him during the league.
Yeah.
Why send him out on a dirty, sloggy field where he's going to end up getting an injury?
It's too important.
Yeah.
So you have to go back to the 2004 Leinster semi-final for the last time Kilkenny beat, or Wexford beat them. You have to go back to 2008 for the last time Wexford even made a provincial final. There's so much at stake. You wonder, will they ever get a better chance, given how clearly vulnerable Kilkenny appear to be, having lost heavily in the All-Ireland final, having been beaten by Wexford on a day where Wexford could have beaten them by considerably more, given the number of goal chances that weren't taken, in particular in the first half. This has to be Wexford day.
I actually think Wexford are going to get better and better opportunities in the next couple of years, even if they don't take this one on Saturday evening, which I actually don't think they will. I expect Kilkenny to come through because of Michael Fennelly, and because they still have... Like, if you name the very best players on the field, you're going to name Richie Hogan, TJ Reid, Michael Fennelly, and there are some excellent players like Lee Chin and Conor McDonald with Wexford. But are you telling me that the best players on the field don't belong to Kilkenny? It's a tight game otherwise.
Well, the best players on paper, will they be the best players on the field on Saturday evening?
Well, they have been for years, so there's no reason to suspect them not being. I mean, okay, Fennelly's got that recurring back issue, so does Richie Hogan. But if those guys are able to play to anywhere near their potential, you know, it's funny that Henry Shefflin was talking about, you know, that Kilkenny are the underdogs and they might be able to, you know, surprise Wexford. I mean, who does he think he's kidding? Kilkenny are not underdogs at all. Like, they are still, like, really, really right in there among the favourites for the All-Ireland. Like, forget
the poor. But there will be an awful lot of groundswell of opinion that are tipping Wexford to win this game.
And rightly so. And, you know, they should. They should.
The start is paramount, is it not?
Of course.
With all that
is,
crowd behind them, the sun out, the Davy factor in that he's not going to be on the sideline, they're let's do it for Davy type thing. That if they go 4 or 5 points down in the opening 10 minutes, because you can imagine the 20 minutes before throw one, there's just going to be, they're going to be frothing at the mouth down at Wexford Park, Kilkenny and Wexford fans, that this is going to have a real old school feel to it again. A phrase I seem to be using more and more often over the last couple of weeks, which I think is a good thing. A big, quick start from Kilkenny, all of that just gets snuffed out.
But does it? Because Tipperary scored 2 quick-fire goals against Wexford in the league semi-final, and Wexford didn't give up, and they kept going and kept going and kept going. What I can't wait for is the atmosphere, because I don't know if you were at it, but when Clare were All-Ireland champions and they went to play Wexford in 2014 and it went to a replay in Wexford Park.
I was at that game.
It was one of the, wasn't it one of the greatest atmospheres?
Yeah.
I remember afterwards, I don't know if you were in the tunnel afterwards, but all the Wexford players went into the dressing room and they were singing The Gambler and there was just smiles on everybody's faces. So that's the kind of thing we're being promised again this weekend. But they need to be able to win that battle in the middle. Jack O'Connor looks like a really good player. He was, you know, obviously Sean Murphy goes to sweeper. Ian Martin went wing back the last day. Jack O'Connor goes in around the middle with Aidan Nolan. And these two guys are brilliant at actually carrying the ball up through the centre, hopefully to lay it off for someone else to do some damage. Will Jason Clear, assuming he stands centre back, will he be able for it? He seems to be a guy who holds the position, but Kilkenny could be under a bit of pressure there. Although Michael Fennelly might stand in his way, of course. And can they get enough ball into Conor McDonald? Because Conor McDonald had a bit of joy on Padraig Walsh in the full forward line the last day. And can he get it again?
Looking at the Shefflin headline, it is laughable, really. Kilkenny capable of causing upset at Wexford Park. Come on, Henry, do us a favour. Call it so.
I'm going to go with Kilkenny. Yeah, it just comes back to who has got the players that have delivered more and more down through the years. And I think the tide is turning in general, but I'm still definitely going for Kilkenny here.
I'm going to go for Wexford just to be a little bit different. And I am getting caught up in the hype and the momentum that they seem to be bringing with them from
you
the league.
You see, you haven't been burned by Kilkenny down through the years time and time again. So, you know.
No, so I'm free to make such a call.
Go for it.
Excellent stuff, Shane. Coming up, we're going to delve into our cauldron of controversy and we'll wrap things up with any other business. Okay, we're into the final throes of this week's Off the Ball GAA podcast with thanks to Borgosh Energy, proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. Keep up to date and follow hashtag hurling to the core. We are delving into the cauldron of controversy again. I know this is the favourite part of the podcast for all of our listeners, our legion of listeners out there. It's the Christy Ring Cup final this weekend. Carlow play Antrim. It's a 5 o'clock throw in Croke Park on Saturday afternoon. So why not cast our minds back 12 months to a huge controversy that enveloped last season's Christy Ring Cup final?
Who could forget? Meath against Antrim in the Christy Ring Cup final. And at the end of the game, Meath were celebrating, but the scoreline was all wrong. The referee, John O'Brien from Tipperary, he had been working off the scoreboard, which had the wrong scoreline up, 218 to 120. And the score was taken back, but it wasn't adjusted on the scoreline. So as Meath celebrated, as Antrim, commiserated with each other and congratulated the Royals, it turned out later on that all the journalists said, hey, this is wrong, went to the referee. He sort of belatedly realised the situation. And then it had to go to a replay, which Meath obviously wouldn't have wanted to
Yeah, well,
give.
There was a couple of things that
they
I remember coming from.
In 2010 with the...
What happened was that there was a score given to the wrong side. Antrim picked up a score to move four ahead. The referee actually gave the score to Meath. When the scoreboard gave the score to Meath, when the error was noticed, they did add the score to Antrim's tally, but they forgot to take it from Meath's tally. So it was actually a drawn game. Antrim had felt that they had been beaten by a point. Meath felt they'd won by a point. Mm. But I remember it on Newstalk's Off the Ball. In the immediate aftermath, the days after the final, the Meath County Board and the players were absolutely dead against offering a replay of a game that they hadn't actually won. I couldn't believe it at the time.
Yeah, but like, you know, if you're playing a game and you think you're a point ahead, you're going to play slightly differently than if you're in a draw situation. So it kind of, I suppose, it prejudiced how everyone was playing on the field.
The big question was, if the shoe had been on the other foot, how would the Meath players have been reacting in the days after the game?
Yeah.
Would they have just said, ah, fair enough, lads, don't bother offering us a replay? Of course they wouldn't.
Do you remember from that film Hot Shots Part 2, the upper hand is on the other foot? You just made me think of that. But the Antrim selector, Gary O'Kane, said at the time, if this had been a Leinster or Munster hurling final or the All-Ireland, the situation which evolved would not have happened. Do you mean to tell me that there was not a referee's assessor in the stand? And do you think for 1 minute the likes of Kilkenny would have been allowed to go up, take delivery of the cup, go home and celebrate and then be told to come back a few days later for a replay? Not a chance. So
that was fair.
Yeah, and obviously they did come back for a replay and Meath got over the line. James Toher was their captain and he's a dual player. He actually got dropped off the hurling panel this year because he wasn't able to commit enough, both himself and Mickey Burke. So in the meantime, Meath have been relegated back on score difference. And this weekend, Antrim could find themselves.
They'll have a chance to atone.
Into the qualifiers, yeah. Possibly against Carlow. And also, a quick mention for a cooler teammate of mine. He'll be playing, should be two brothers, Nisha Waldron and Keane Waldron. They'll be lining out with Derry this weekend against Armagh in the Nicky Rackard final at Croke Park as well.
And then it's Warwickshire, Leitrim, the Larry Markup final. So a proud day for all of those involved in those three All-Ireland finals. Good luck to everybody who'll be playing at Croke Park on Saturday afternoon. That's pretty much our lot for this week on the Off the Ball GA pod. Anything you want to throw in there?
No, just hopefully the scoreboard is working correctly and the right men are in charge of it at Croke Park.
You're going to get out of bed Sunday morning or just like curl up in the corner of a dark room, pull the drapes and just hope that Monday morning rolls around when you'd have more, a little more hurling to look forward to next weekend?
I'm at Wexford Kilkenny, but I'm also at Clare Kerry in Ennis on Sunday as well, so there'll be no escape from GAA this weekend. Both codes, which I love equally, as everyone knows.
Well, I'm up in Kingspan Breffni Park on Sunday for Off the Ball, which I'm very much looking forward
better
to.
Better you than me.
There you go. Thanks for listening. You can always get in touch with us on the GAA pod. You can tweet both myself and Shane on Twitter, and you can send an email into sport@newstalk.com if you really want to get take a little more time to abuse us or praise us or whatever the case may be. We'll chat to you next week. Enjoy your GAA this weekend.
A goal on here, goal chance for Conor McGrath. Bernie, surely give it in, Conor.
Oh, woo! What a goal!
Mackie heading it towards the 21 metre line. Keane Mackie still going. Go on, your goal is up for Cats.
Oh,
what a goal!
I can't think of a better position or a better place to be in right now, anywhere in the world. It's time to take Sam to throne.
If you look back in sporting history, you'll see that the whingers and the whiners are forgotten. The characters remembered briefly. But what'll stick in your mind are the champions who showed class.
I want nothing to do with that, to be quite honest. You know, I think it's a disgrace.
A little small change before the game, worth the treat. A bit of luck, said
Conor. Donovan,
Conor,
man.
Wild effort on goal. It's on the first! It's on the first! Equaliser!
Incredible!
Oh. See the coppers! Yeah!
It might sound a little something, but damn the game. If it don't mean nothing, what is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, behind the game. I got game. She got